Thanks, Brother Jimmy.
Watch End Lake Bible School. Our first period teacher is our brother Kitson Reed. His subject today is, It is in mine heart to make a covenant. Brother Kitson.
Good morning, brothers and sisters. Oh, we sound a bit tired today. Lovely. Well, we'll see what we can do. So, we looked at the formative years in terms of King Ahaz, and just a brief summary for 30 seconds. Ahaz's problems. Syria, in verse 5 of 2 Chronicles, chapter 28, verse 5, carried away the people. Verse 7, his son was murdered. The king of Israel killed 120,000 men in verse 6. He made Judah naked. The Philistines made inroads, verse 18. Verse 19, they were brought low by God. And verse 20, the king of Assyria brought distress. And that's what King Hezekiah inherited. Just to pick up towards the end of yesterday's chapter we looked at, we're told in verse 24, Ahaz gathered the vessels to destroy them. He shut the doors. He sent in every several city of Judah, he made high places. And then he slept with his fathers. This, brothers and sisters, is the only slide I have. It's going to be there for a long time, so take your time. Take your time. Just a couple of things, and I conferred with Brother Bernard on this one, so blame him. It seems that actually the timings, the time period, it is reasonable to suggest that King Ahaz fathered Hezekiah when he was 11 years of age. If you want more details on that, please feel free. And we said, Abiah, Yah, his father. That maybe tells us a lot, doesn't it, brothers and sisters? So that's the only slide I have. So we'll press on into our subject matter. Verse 1. Hezekiah began to reign when he was 25 years old. And he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Abiah, Yah, his father, the daughter of Zechariah. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David his father had done. Now, the thing to remember, and let's be quite clear, brothers and sisters, there are many in the audience today. You've done your own personal study on Hezekiah. Sunday school teachers, Hezekiah. This is a magnificent subject. And you know that Hezekiah is quite literally chomping at the bit. His father is no longer there. Hezekiah, brothers and sisters, is like a spring. He's like a coil ready to be unleashed, to overturn the madness that his father had left. That was his challenge. How could he bring the people back to God? How could he infuse within them that which seemed a distant memory in their worship? Five times does the word first come. Verse 3, first. Twice in verse 3, actually. and then again for good measure in verse 17. Three times. He, in the first year of his reign, in the first month, opened the doors of the house. And you will, of course, make the comparisons, because you know this subject as good as I, in chapter 28 and verse 24. His father shut up the doors. He opened the doors. Here then is an interesting thing. The Hebrew word repaired, kiskayu, from the root word coming from the name Hezekiah, strengthened of Yah. So in effect, he was quite literally putting his own name into practice. He began by strengthening the doors. Because of course, that was the way to the things of God. But more than that, in verse 3, we're told, he opened the doors of the house of the Lord. Now that is a wonderful expression, and we know as honest Bible students, from time to time it is good to see where that occurs first in Scripture. This is basic stuff, isn't it, for us? It first comes in Genesis chapter 7, verse 11. We won't go there because of time. Pathark. Now, please excuse my pronunciation. Pathark. Genesis 7, verse 11. When God opened the windows of heaven. Now, you will understand that when the water gushed forth, opened the windows of heaven, and the great depths, we're told, were broken up. Now, you see, in the New Testament, Peter says something quite beautiful, doesn't he? We know this. In the Old Testament, God says to Noah, build an ark for the saving of your family. Now, Peter, in the New Testament, reminds us of the principle. He says, eight souls were saved by the ark. No. He doesn't say that, does he? He says, eight souls were saved by water. And what Peter is going on to talk about, of course, is baptism. The like figure there unto his baptism. And what he's really saying is, it's not that God told Noah to build an ark to save him from the flood. But rather that God told Noah, that God sent the flood to save him from the wickedness of the world. Eight souls were saved by water. Now that same saving agent would bring destruction. That which saved Noah would bring destruction and death in the world. And that's the figure of baptism, isn't it, brothers and sisters? And so here then, that blessing of flowing, once those doors were opened, it is a catalyst, and the clock starts ticking. From that point, when the doors were opened again and the blessings flow from that point, brothers and sisters, that is the point. And that from that point of blessing, when the doors were opened again, would bring hope and life, and praise to God. And he brought in the priests. Interesting word that, isn't it? In, it's so small, but it is pregnant with meaning. He brings them in again. He brought in the priests and the Levites and gathered them together in the east street, He gathered them. Notice chapter 28 and verse 24. Those of you who are making notes. And Ahaz gathered together the vessels of the house of the Lord and cut them in pieces, did Ahaz, whereas his son Hezekiah gathered. Verse 4. Again in verse 24. I'm sorry. Again there in verse 14. And they gathered. Notice here in verse 14, verse 25, how he brought the people together, didn't he? There in verse 4, he gathered them together and said unto them, hear ye me. Verse 4, gathered. Verse 15, gathered, and verse 20. Then Hezekiah the king rose early and gathered the rulers of the city. So in verse 4, he gathers the priests and the Levites. Verse 15, and they gathered their brethren. Now, did you notice that? Because simple Bible study, brothers and sisters, is to read with care. Because nothing is wasted. Hezekiah is a catalyst. He gathers the priests and the Levites. Verse 15, in turn, and they gathered their brethren and sanctified them. And then again, verse 20. Then Hezekiah the king rose early and gathered the rulers of the city. The priests and the Levites. And then it's infectious, isn't it, in verse 15. They gathered their brethren. And then verse 20. Hezekiah gathered the rulers of the city. And so what Hezekiah is doing, my dear brothers and sisters, is a master class in ecclesial organization in how best to work together. Now, this is the point. One of the greatest things we can ever do to bring an ecclesia together is to find a project. Now, whatever that project might be, it might be an ecclesial special effort where you give out the bills and you organize the talks, special Bible lectures, public lectures, and you invite your friends. And that ecclesial special effort, however, there are times where our ecclesial special efforts are no longer special, just merely an effort to attend. And if we're not careful within ecclesial life, if there is no project, then in our business meetings, we end up falling out over the color of the curtains, or the type of chairs we want, or the color of the carpet. Or is it appropriate to have flowers on the table on a Sunday morning? Those are the things. Because we've lost sight of doing things together. Notice what it says there in verse 4. And brought in the priests and the Levites and gathered them together into the east street. Oh, nothing is wasted. We've been telling our young people, never read more than 3 verses without asking yourselves at least one question. So here's my question. Why the East Street? I know there's slight ambiguity with the translation here, but why the East Street according to the Authorized Version? And in my mind, brothers and sisters, I see Hezekiah with the Levites and the priests taking them to the East Street, because the East Street would lead to the temple, because the doors of the temple would open and face the east, where the sun would rise. And of course, you're on the East Street, it takes you to the temple. And it's in my mind, I see Hezekiah with the Levites and the priests, and he's standing on the East Street, and he says to his brethren, you see that down there? You see that? we are going to bring a reformation in the house of God. We're going to see people again in droves coming down this East Street. Are you with me, my brethren? He's 25. He's 25. Notice that. On the East Street. And he gathers them. For our fathers, look at verse 5, Lord God of your fathers, and carry forth the filthiness out of the holy place. For our fathers, my father, have trespassed and done that which was evil in the eyes of the Lord our God, and have forsaken him and have turned away their faces. If we had time, we could look at the references in Isaiah about this. Turned, turned, being turned, turned back to God. And have turned away their faces from the habitation of the Lord and have turned their backs. Also, they have shut up the doors of the porch and put out the lamps. A couple of things to say here. They have turned their backs on the things of God. You might like to look at this one. Ezekiel chapter 8, please. Ezekiel chapter 8, Ezekiel being brought by God in the context of the temple again. Ezekiel chapter 8, Hezekiah says that God's people had turned their backs. Verse 15 of Ezekiel chapter 8. Then said he unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than these. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men with their backs toward the temple of the Lord, and their faces toward the east, and they worshipped the sun toward the east. You see what's happening there, brothers and sisters? They were facing the rising sun in worship. And they had turned their backs on the things of God. That is the point. The temple doors faced the rising of the sun. And they had turned their backs on God. What an affront. No respect. They had turned their backs on God. There's something else to say here too in verse 7. Also, they have shut up the doors of the porch and put out the lamps. If we had time, we could look at 1 Samuel, do you remember? In the days of Eli. And ere the lamp of the Lord was going out. And that little phrase there is so pregnant with meaning, isn't it? Because what took place there, in the confines of that place of worship, in the days of Eli, it was indicative of the nation as a whole, wasn't it? The candle, the lamp. We transpose that forward. We won't go there because of time. Remember, in 2 Chronicles, chapter 21, verse 17. We won't go there. 2 Chronicles 21, verse 17. When Ishbi-Benob, girded with a new sword, wanted to kill David. But David's nephew, Abishai, saves him, succors him. And David's men turn to him and say, thou shalt go no more with us to battle, lest ye quench the light of Israel. And you turn over the page. 2 Chronicles chapter 22, verse 19. Those of you who are making notes, it says, David says that God is his light, his candle, the margin says. And Hezekiah is saying, isn't he? were just like that in the days of Eli. Weak. No spiritual growth. And invariably when we read of Eli, what is he doing? What is he doing, brothers and sisters? He's either lying down or telling Samuel to go back and lie down. Or is sitting. That's the point, isn't it? He's either lying down or sitting. Two Chronicles chapter 29. Verse 8. Wherefore the wrath of the Lord was upon Judah and Jerusalem, and he hath delivered them to trouble? Astonishment? And hissing. Now these words are very illuminating, brothers and sisters. He describes the kingdom to which he has inherited as trouble, astonishment, and hissing. Trouble, Hebrew word zavar. It means horror, trembling, terror. Then we look at the word astonishment. Shamar, desolate. Then we look at the word hissing, sharakor. It means derision, being hated by others. Now in those three words, it encapsulates, I think, everything. Horror, trembling, rather like Deuteronomy 28, remember? I will give thee there, trembling heart. Sorrow of mind. You will wish that when it is morning, it will be evening. And when it is evening, it will be morning. That's how they felt inwardly. The fear. Inwardly. And then astonishment. Shamar. It means desolate. And they look as to what's happening in the land. They were just eking out a living. Quite literally. And tomorrow we're going to look a little bit more about that because of the priests. They relied on what would be brought in because the Levites did not have an inheritance. God was their inheritance. And so the feeling of horror. And socially, it was difficult to put bread on the table. Desolate. And then we move as to what others thought of them. Hissing, a derision. So mentally, socially, physically, and even those external forces, they were totally engulfed, weren't they, brothers and sisters? Whatever, there was nowhere to turn. Even the and actually, in the United Kingdom, the rise of anti-Semitism. But that's for another time. For lo, our fathers have fallen by the sword, and our sons and our daughters and our wives are in captivity for this. Now it is in mine heart to make a covenant with the Lord God of Israel, that his fierce wrath may turn away from us. My sons. My sons? Hang on a minute. Remember, never read more than three verses without asking yourself at least one question. Why does he refer to them as my sons? Is it the bar mitzvah, the son of the law? Now, those of you who are making notes, you would like to know that in Numbers chapter 8, verse 24 to 25, we are told that the priests could serve from the age of 25 to the age of 50. Numbers 8, verse 24 to 25. Only from 25 to 50. Then they were retired at 50, right? Start at 25, end at 50. A 25-year period of service. He's 25. There are older brothers. This is how I was brought up, brothers and sisters. Calling people like Brother Skip. Uncle Skip. That's how I was brought up. We show respect. So here's this young upstart king saying to these priests, most of them probably old enough to be his father, my sons. I don't think there's lack of respect here. I think what he's saying is, you're the sons of the law. And what saith the scriptures? To Timothy? Let no man despise thy youth, but be an example. Be an example. And so this young king, Hezekiah, comes to the throne, my sons. Maybe that tells us a bit more about Hezekiah. He was one who cared for his people, for his family. For God setteth the solitary in families. It was his family. That's the mark of a great leader. He wanted the best for them. My sons, be not now negligent, for the Lord hath chosen you to stand before him, to serve him, and that ye should minister unto him and burn incense. Now, verse 11, I think, is very important to stress here. Hezekiah wants to bring them together. And what he does, brothers and sisters, is masterful. Hezekiah elevates their service. God has chosen you. Who is on the Lord's side? The Levite. God has chosen you. Now, let's just develop this a little more, shall we, please? Numbers and chapter 16. Because in Numbers chapter 16, we see here the principle as to jealousy and as to how Korah, Dathan, and Abiram were jealous. They had forgotten the rule. They had forgotten the privilege of their position, of their standing. And as a result, because they had looked upon it as being not that important, well, we want to do Moses' job. Oh, does this ring a bell somewhere? We don't see our job as being important, as being vital for the spiritual and eternal well-being of the family. Oh, we want his job because it looks more important and because the world around me is telling me that my role as a sister, as a wife, isn't really important at all, the world says. And so in certain parts, as we know, brothers and sisters, there is this feeling of, well, actually, we might aspire to better things because what we are doing here in raising up a godly seed is not that really very important. How wrong. How wrong that is. Numbers chapter 16, verse 9. Notice how Moses quotes back, right? Verse 3, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said unto them, ye take too much upon you, Moses and Aaron, seeing all the congregation are holy, you take too much upon you. Verse 7, and it shall be, Moses says, that the man whom the Lord hath will choose, he shall be holy. Ye take too much upon you, ye sons of Levi. Now notice, brothers and sisters, the masterful way in which Moses addresses the problem. He puts his finger, notice, right on the heart, right on the pulse of the problem. Because the heart of the problem is the problem of the heart. Seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel hath separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand, Hebrew, amad, to make one's stand in service, to attend upon, and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them. It is to be a privilege to serve our brothers and sisters. And all you have done is belittle it. And he hath brought thee near to him, and all thy brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee. It's rather like, remember, brothers and sisters, in Luke chapter 1, verse 18 to 20, we won't go there because of time. Remember? How will I know these things? I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of the Lord, he says. How dare you question my authority? I am a servant of the living God. I stand in service. And maybe the problem is, when the issues come in ecclesial life, because the service to which you have been called, sister, brother, it is not recognized as being service at all. But to aspire to the high profile things, the things that might be seen, the things that might show off self, that is not service. Oh, that is service. It is service to self. And we're back to Ahaz again, aren't we? 2 Chronicles chapter 29. My sons, be not now negligent, for the Lord hath chosen you to stand before him and to serve him, that ye should minister unto him and burn incense. Oh, now, burn incense. That is interesting. Burn incense. Keep a marker there, please. And I want you to go to 2 Chronicles, 2 Kings, 2 Kings. And chapter 18. Now, if I was to say to you, brothers and sisters, when Hezekiah comes to the throne, what does he do first? The first day, first month, well, we've been reading about it. Now, what is so beautiful when you compare the King's account and the Chronicles account, and many of us have done that, and there are things which are very interesting, but that's for another time. But notice carefully how Kings portrays him bursting onto the scene. 2 Kings 18 and verse 4. And Hezekiah removed the high places and brake the images and cut down the groves and brake in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made, for unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it, and he called it Nehushtan. First question, because never read more than three verses without asking yourself one question. So here's my question. What is the period of time between the making of the brazen serpent in Numbers to the days of Hezekiah? Well, according to my estimation, I make it approximately 750 years. So for 750 years, approximately, certainly within the last couple of hundred years, prior to the coming of Hezekiah, let's be conservative here. They were burning incense to the brazen serpent. It's rather like, I suppose, in the days of the ark, you remember. By the time of Eli, they were looking upon the ark of the covenant as being nothing more than merely a sort of lucky charm. Let's take the ark and bring it into battle. And the Philistines steal it. If we bring it into battle, it will save us. 750 years later, this thing which was now established in Judah, it was part of the crown jewels. It represented their history. And Hezekiah bursts on the scene. And his top priority? He destroys it. He's 25. You can see them aghast with horror. How dare this young king walk into the place as if he owns it and destroys this thing of beauty? Now, I wonder if we can dig down a little deeper. And I'm going to suggest to you that there is something more here. Such was the venom of the Israelitish idolatry, brothers and sisters, that the brazen serpent stung worse than the fiery serpent. Are you with me? They made a serpent, and if they were to look to it in faith, the fiery serpents, not that they were fiery, but rather that the bite was fiery. And now, Hezekiah again. Now, as Messiah in type, would crush the serpent. That's it, isn't it? And what saith the scriptures? Ye generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? And begin to say not within yourselves, we have Abraham to our father, for God is even of these stones to raise up children unto Abraham. It's quite remarkable, isn't it? It's so fitting, isn't it, brothers and sisters, that Hezekiah bursts onto the scene, and what does he do first? He destroys that which captured the people. And the sin of the people was still coursing through the veins of the subjects of Judah. They were the very embodiment of what God detested. And so, we are told whilst we are there, in verse 5, he trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor any that were before him. For he clave to the Lord and departed not from following him. He clave, he stuck, he cleaved, he adhered to, from where we get the word adhesive, to take to. And that stickability, brothers and sisters, that Hezekiah had in his life, we must have the same. Now, the word cleave is an interesting word. It can mean quite the opposite. It's one of those strange English words. There are a few of them. We have a meat cleaver, which splits something in two. But by the same token, we have the word cleave, which means to cling, to stick, to adhere to. And so, as Hezekiah developed his spiritual life as a young boy growing up, there were things that he would have to put in place. I want us, please, to come across to Deuteronomy and chapter 6. Keep a marker in 2 Chronicles, now that you've lost it. 2 Chronicles chapter 6 and verse 3. 2 Chronicles 6 verse 3. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, and that ye may increase mightily, as the Lord God of thy fathers hath promised thee, in the land that floweth with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, all thy soul and all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently. Gently, brother. Deal with them gently. Go well gently. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. In the margin, from the Hebrew, it is the word wet or sharpen. Thou shalt sharpen them diligently. And so we have this figure of the father of the home sharpening his children. He's sharpening them with the word. He's sharpening them. He's wetting them. He's allowing them to be sharpened by the word, so that when they go out into the big wild world, they can differentiate between what is right and what is wrong. That's why we do it, don't we? To equip our children. And if we have no children of our own, that makes no difference. Because God setteth the solitary in families. And I have brought up my children for you. And you have brought up your children for me. Because the world tells them, it's all right. If it feels good, do it. No. We sharpen our children that they might understand and know and see. 2 Chronicles chapter 29. And so now, my sons, be not now negligent, for the Lord hath chosen you. And now he is now bringing them, and he's elevating them in service. It's about service. It's always about service, no matter what the task. A number of years ago, my wife and I were abroad helping some ecclesias, and they had a business meeting. And they were talking about what are the jobs in the ecclesia. Some people said this, some people said that. And one brother at the back says, well, we need someone to clean the toilets. And you see the point. It's all about service. Whatever the menial task, it's all necessary. It's all about service. Now, you see, brothers and sisters, within ecclesial life, we have those who like to work, and those who would like to let them work. And what Hezekiah is doing is building and fostering this wonderful thing that will bring blessings to them in this project of building, arising. Now we know demolition experts, penny a dozen. Now, I'll tell you this, coming from the UK, the brethren and sisters in the UK look upon many of the brethren in Canada as being those who can turn their hand to anything. Put up a tent in next to no time. Put on a roof. We just come back from Manitou. Put on a roof. Plumbing, the Cooper's back there, probably drop an engine and put it back together in one day, no problem. But the point is, demolition experts, penny a dozen. You find me a builder, one who can build and encourage others to build. And that's what he's doing. And so now, notice how it begins, verse 12, then, and maybe in verse 11, that ye should minister unto him and burn incense. Maybe that at that point we might interject what he did with the thing of brass, Nehushtan. They've been burning incense to it. Now you need to burn incense to God. Then the Levites arose Here it comes. The Levites arose. The Kohathites, Merari, Gershon, Merari, they had the pillars, the sockets, the frames. Gershon, they had the curtains, the ropes, the coverings. Kohath, oh, they had the sanctuary and the ark. Psalm 80. And he galvanizes them together. And he says, you know your job. Maybe this is the point. Brother, sister, value your role. Make the best of your service in your role. And thank God. And look upon it as being a privilege, whatever your role is. And do not listen to the noise of the world. Because the noise of the world wants to devalue your role. Husbands, elevate your wives. Now, don't misunderstand me. We know the roles and the responsibilities. We know the role of the husband to be the redeemer, the one who will lead in spiritual things. I'm not talking about that. Husbands, love your wives. Wash them with the word. And so he gathers them together and brings them. If we had time, we could see how in verse 13 and 14, he brings into service the singing. Oh, well, we need to really. 1 Chronicles chapter 25, please. 1 Chronicles and chapter 25. Verse 1. Moreover, David and the captains of the hosts separated unto the service of the sons of Asaph and of Heman and of Jeduthun. Verse 2. Asaph. Verse 3. Jeduthun. And if you really want an incredible study on these things, brothers and sisters, Brother Roger Lewis, the masters of music. And so what he does, he reintroduces now the worship, the service, the singing again, that which was silent. The doors were opened and he reintroduces the singing of it all again in service. Verse 16, and the priests went into the inner part of the house of the Lord to cleanse it. Verse 17, now they began on the first day of the first month to sanctify, and on the eighth day of the month came they to the porch of the Lord. So they sanctified the house of the Lord in 8 days, and in the 16th day of the first month they made it, and they made an end. 16 days. 16 days, brothers and sisters, it took them to cleanse the place. Then they went in to Hezekiah the king and said, now as I read this verse 18, I want you to cast your mind back to yesterday's study. How we moved the brazen altar to the north. Did you notice that? Then they went in to Hezekiah the king and said, we have cleansed all the house of the Lord and the altar of burnt offerings. Did you notice how it's just put in there, matter of factish? But did you notice also how it seems, doesn't it? Yes, Hezekiah gave the command, but now they are taking the initiative themselves. And in that little phrase, In our mind, we see these Levites knowing full well it was quite obvious that this altar that belonged to God, it had no place on the north side. It was never to be on the north side. And you almost get the impression that they didn't even have to wait for Hezekiah to say a thing, did they? They put it back in its right place. Now that's beautiful, isn't it, brothers and sisters? They chipped in and worked together. It was once asked at a Bible school, how can we get brothers and sisters to attend Bible class more? Because it is generally accepted that one can tell the spirituality of an ecclesia by the attendance at Bible class, right? So how can we get brothers and sisters to come to Bible class rather than just being on Zoom? Well, we can't, can we? We can't make our brothers and sisters get to Bible class. No. But what we can do is make them feel as if they're missing out. Oh, you missed the cracking talk on Hezekiah. Oh, sorry. Let them feel that they're missing out. That they're missing out. That they're missing something special. And that they need to be there with their brothers and sisters. In person. The greeting of the hand. The warm embrace. The smile. The interacting with the children. Those are the elements which are part and parcel of Bible school. But you know what I enjoy at Bible school, brothers and sisters? It's the small talk afterwards. Brother Kitson, I like what you said. You're wrong. So let me put you right. That's fine. That's good. So here then, he gathers them together. Verse 19, notice, moreover, all the vessels which King Ahaz in his reign did cast away in his transgression have we prepared and sanctified, and behold, they are before the altar of the Lord. How wonderful is that, brothers and sisters? How wonderful is that? Well, I've gone over by 1 minute, so I have a final question. I want you to think about this in the next 24 hours. What is the one thing that Hezekiah did to bring about a reformation in Judah, which is not mentioned in the book of Chronicles, nor mentioned in the book of Kings? Oh, nor is it mentioned in Isaiah.